is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And on The Stack, we review a bunch of comics that are out this very day, and we're going to have a bunch of advanced reviews for you as well, so get ready for that.
A look into the future.
Ooh, some prognostication.
We gaze into our crystal ball and have medium temperature takes.
We're not going to spoil much.
Ooh. That's what you want in a good psychic, is a psychic that gives you the broad strokes but doesn't spoil the details.
Right. Ooh, I'm seeing your future right now.
It's pretty good, but the next issue is when it's going to really unfold.
I like the first half, but not the second half so much.
Ooh, good.
Did you see, by the way, you know, there's this horror movie Countdown is coming out? Looks like it sounded stupid, and then I saw the trailer, and I was like, well, this is stupid, but it seems fun stupid.
Okay.
It's like Final Destination, but with an app, so people get this app they download, and it tells you how long until you're going to die.
Oh.
Which is, like, cute, and then people are like, you're going to die in 2 days, and these monsters come to get them, or whatever. I don't know. But they actually release the app.
Ooh,
which is pretty
tricky,
fucked up.
Yeah.
I'm terrified.
And it works. Did you? And you downloaded it?
I downloaded it, and I have 20 minutes to live.
Oh, that's fine. I'll be here. This is perfect.
Yeah, you'll see it happen.
I have an app that tells me when I'm going to murder someone.
Oh, when is that?
19 minutes.
Oh, jeez. All right.
Could be unrelated.
Probably. Who knows where Pete is? Let's jump into it and talk about Marauders, number one from Marvel Comics. Now, this is the first book in the rebooted line of X-Men that is not written by Jonathan Hickman. This is written by Jerry Dugan. And in my mind, this was very much the test of concept for this whole reboot of X-Men.
Yes, exactly.
And I would say they passed.
Yes, it works. And it's such a tonal difference, a total tonal difference from the Hickman stuff.
Yeah.
It has the classic Jerry Dugan, like, there's some fun, there's some lightness, characters are being a little more, like, rebellious, I guess, is the theme of this book. And there's some mystery there, which is nice, and just X-Men being X-Men.
Yeah, this is real good. So the concept of the book, Kitty Pryde is about to go to Krakoa with the rest of the mutants, but Krakoa won't let her through a gateway.
Rejected.
Yeah, so she ends up sailing there instead, and over the course of the issue, it becomes revealed she has a little bit of a deal with Emma Frost. What Emma wants her to do is basically take that anger over not being let through the gateway and find other mutants who are being blocked from going through the gateway, usually by their governments for whatever reason, and rescue them, as well as transfer goods, etc. Essentially be the pirates of the X-Men side of the Marvel Universe. She ends up recruiting a couple of other folks over the course of the issue. Mm. There's, like you said, a little bit of mystery there. I'm certainly suspicious of what's going on with Kitty.
What do you mean by suspicious? You're suspicious of her.
I'm suspicious of her.
Like, she is, like, she's pretending to not be able to walk through the door. Like, if I was like, Alex, I can't get through this door, and you were like, that's just air.
Yeah, just go through. No, so there's that one panel where she's looking at one of the ex-kids, and she says something very mean to them, and it's kind of a terrifying panel.
She does seem meaner, and she's, like, drinking Canadian whiskey in a way that seems unlike her.
Right. So it does feel like there's something going on with Kitty. We don't know what it is yet. Also, she ends up calling them Marauders. So I'm completely forgetting the name of the character. I think it's Malice, the one who's the necklace, the evil necklace.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if this is actually like Malice or something like that has taken over Kitty and that's why she can't go through.
Well, really, any X-Men or villain, any mutant from any point in history is on the table, because we get the original Pyro returns in this issue, which I thought very casually, like, yeah, I died so long ago, but I'm back because that's the way it works.
This is another thing that I think was really neat in terms of the proof of concept is we know that part of the goal that Xavier and Magneto have is to not just resurrect mutants if they die, but bring back the ones that are gone. And in this case, we find out, or rather, Iceman finds out based on his accent that this is the original Pyro.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that we're going to see coming back is random resurrections across the board. That's interesting.
Yeah, now they can like retell and riff on like basically any big X-Men story in all of X-Men history. Like, that's wild.
Yes.
It feels like this is making the X-Men as a sort of separate universe very mythological. Like, they can retell these stories and sort of perfect stories and characters that we've lost.
Two other things that I really liked about this. One is the sense that not every mutant is totally gung-ho about Krakoa. We've been talking a bit how they feel like this cult of X running through the comic books right now. This pushes back on that. It's not just Kitty. It's also Wolverine, who gives her a whole grocery list of
stuff.
I
thought that was very funny. That was my favorite part of the issue.
Yeah, super fun. And the other thing that I liked about it was... I did like Dugan continuing the text pages in the middle.
Yeah.
I think that's a nice visual riff to continue. And I hope it does continue because I think ultimately it makes the comic a richer experience.
Yeah. And just marries the line together in a nice way, since it seems like the writers are going to have a lot of freedom to tell this kind of story they want to tell and the way they want to tell it, which is fantastic.
Yes. I'm also curious to see, to be perfectly honest, I haven't been paying too much attention to the lineups, how much crossover there's going to be with the lineup. Like right now, by the end of the issue, spoiler, but on the boat we have Kitty, Storm, Iceman, Pyro, and
Lockheed.
There's nobody else, right?
I think that's it.
Yeah, there's a couple of other characters that are kind of in the orbit there, but they're the main ones who are off the board right now. I hope that continues. I hope it's like, nope, they're just on this team. They're off doing this thing while everybody else is doing their other thing.
Well, don't you think Wolverine's going to have to be like, sorry, I have to go home and have sex with Jean Grey and Scott Summers?
Yeah. Got to have my nice little thruple going on.
Yeah. Because that's something that
can't do that on a boat.
No. Well, you can definitely can.
Can you?
Almost, I bet it happens more on boats.
You think so?
Yeah, yeah.
Thruples on a boat? I don't know. I'd get seasick.
Yeah, that's definitely the hardest part.
Hardest part. All right, let's move on to a DC comic, Black Adam, Year of the Villain, number one. This continues the Year of the Villain one-shots that they've been rolling out. This one ties into continuity even more heavily than any of the other ones.
Honestly, this book, I was like, yo, DC has so much going on right now. It, in a way that is like cool in one way, but also like so crazy. There's the Doom versus Justice stuff going on that is what Year of the Villain is ostensibly all about, mostly based in the Justice League flagship title. But also we have the Batman Who Laughs stuff is all through this because we get Shazam, who's all jokered up. There's some reference to the Leviathan thing in here. It's crazy.
It is crazy.
The fact that they are able to coexist here is amazing.
I was very surprised and impressed by this comic.
Yeah.
Because I thought it could go either way. I have enjoyed these one-shots so far. Often you get a mixed bag. It's mostly like it feels like a money grab when you're doing these spin-off one-shots. But everybody has been putting so much care and precision into absolutely everyone. This really feels like a great mission statement for Black Adam as he goes up against the Shazam Who Laughs, or whatever you want to call him. And one thing that really works when a Black Adam story works is that it doesn't necessarily redeem him. Like, he's not a good guy, but he is a loyal guy, and that comes through here.
When you really get it in his head, you get his sort of governing philosophy, and what I like about this is he spends the last like couple pages of the books talking about how he's like, I made a mistake, and talks to his people, and I thought that was really cool. It made him feel like a benevolent leader, even though he is technically a supervillain. He does feel like someone who is like a Dr. Doom who's even more on the side of like, I want to do what's right for my people.
Yeah, with Dr. Doom, it always feels like, I believe in the Latverians, but I might disintegrate them.
Yes, I also hate them, Richard! Yes.
Yeah.
He's like Dr. Doom without all the face hang-ups.
Because
he's got that pristine, Dwayne The Rock Johnson-style face.
The eyebrow, just cocked up.
Great stuff, yeah.
Good old cocked up eyebrow. Cocked.
Yeah.
Moving on, this is an advanced one from Image Comics. This is a biggie, Undiscovered Country, number one. This is by Charles Soule and Scott Snyder teaming up to tell what some folks are calling the next Walking Dead. It's already sold out in advance, and it's been optioned for a movie, I believe, as well, right?
Yes, I think it's, this book is going to be
series,
huge.
Quibi series, I'm not 100% sure.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be quick-bited, 10-minute bursts for my Quibi heads out there. This is going to be a huge book, and reading it, obviously, we're not going to give much in the way of talking about the plot, but I really liked it. It feels like they're a Jurassic Park with a little more sort of political underpinnings and more sort of societal look on society.
I did not know at all what to expect going into this. I think they have said that the concept is that the United States has been walled off for a very long time.
30 years.
30 years. Some people venture inside the United States, but the direction that it goes in is pretty shocking and surprising almost immediately.
Yeah.
The visuals are fantastic. Out of this world. It instantly creates a new sci-fi world where, again, there's parts of it, particularly at the beginning of the book, where it feels like, okay, you got the stuff going on that I've seen in other aspects of sci-fi, but it very quickly spins it out into its own mythology, its own characters. This is very exciting. I'm excited to see where this goes next.
Yeah, I thought it was a great first issue. A lot of stuff is established while still doesn't fly off the rails, or you don't feel like over-bombarded with exposition or information. And the characters, you don't learn a ton about them, but especially the main character, the Doctor, she's an interesting character, and I'm excited to follow sort of her journey.
It's great. I also think Charles Soule and Scott Snyder balance each other out very nicely. In terms of the writing, it blends very nicely. They're both very good.
Because you know Scott's going to be like, and then Nth Metal, and Charles is like, hey,
this is not a DC comic.
Scott's like, well, what if Batman, and he's like, no, Let's do this.
And Charles Soule is like, yo, Star Wars, blah, 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 blah,
blah. Yeah, and then Scott's like, enough, dude.
Yeah. Basically, what we're saying is they're out of control, the two of them.
No, seeing them together on this is super exciting, super great. This is going to be a huge book, I think.
I agree. Definitely pick that up when it's out November 6th. Next one, this is another biggie from Marvel Comics, The Immortal Hulk, number 25.
Oh, man. This was a meal.
It sure was. This is one of those comic books that, not to overestimate my own intelligence, but this is one of those books.
Please do not overestimate your intelligence.
Well, what I'm saying is that, like, this is one of those books where I'm like, I don't know if I'm smart enough to get this.
Nice.
It's definitely, there's so much going on. It's so deep. It's so complex. I could feel my brain creaking while I'm reading it. This issue jumps hugely far ahead to the future, past the end of the Marvel Universe, follows two beings that aren't even really beings at all. They're more energy forms, I guess. Yeah,
they're the very last creatures in the universe, I would say. And they are trying to save the last star that is in danger of going out because of this great green menace. Green is the color of death. I loved all of this imagery stuff. And I thought this was great. I'm going to say I'm super smart, so I definitely got it.
Nice. Just real quick, explain everything to me.
I do think the idea is that if Hulk is the strongest one there is, then eventually by the end of the universe, he will have elevated to be a Galactus-like figure, and I think that's what we get here. I thought it was fantastic. Also, the idea that because his rage is unending, it will never stop until the entire world, the entire country, world, universe, everything is destroyed along with him.
Yeah, what it does very effectively and what they've been doing all along is they've been running the gamut on this title of, is the Hulk a villain? Is he a good guy? What exactly is he? And ultimately, what I think this hits on, to your point, is he is a force of nature.
Yeah.
He is unstoppable. He is inevitable, to the point where about 3/4 of the way through this issue, we find out the Hulk is essentially dead. He's just moving through the universe, destroying things, and that's the only thing he is at this point.
Yeah.
So good. And then there's the big reveal at the end of the issue, which is also fantastic.
Yeah. It's great. I also like the idea, Alec Ewing has gotten so much credit for being like, oh, it's a horror book. And this issue is in particularly a sci-fi book.
Yeah.
And to be able to fold that in seamlessly and have it resonate with the rest of the series and carry the themes forward in a wildly different type of story, I thought was awesome. And just like sort of, he's like stunting on us as readers because this book became a huge seller, and now he's getting to really tell any story he wants.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. Definitely pick it up. Next one from DC Comics, Batman Superman number 3. More Jokerized heroes. This time it's Superman himself. He is undercover. As we all know, Superman, the stealthiest superhero.
Yes.
He is undercover trying to find out what the Batman who laughs. I always want to say the Joker who laughs.
It's the Batman.
Yeah, the Batman.
Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
He's laughing.
Yes.
So
it's
that's
just
why
like he's having a good
he's
time.
Crazy. He's crazy. He's a giggler.
Creepy.
He's a goofy giggler.
Yes. He is trying to find out what's going on with him, what his ultimate plan is, and by the end, we find out a lot more about it. How'd you feel about this issue?
I love the Batman-Superman team-up book in general. There's been a number of iterations over the last, like, 10, 15 years. Seeing them together is really nice, and the fact that it's so focused on Batman Who Laughs is cool for a little while, but I'm looking forward to when they sort of move out and get to do standalone adventures and things like that. I feel like we've gotten a lot of the Batman Who Laughs. Really loved the last series, the Scott Snyder series. So I need a break from it mentally.
I agree. Yes. I think
I want the Batman Who's serious.
We have that too. That's also in the issue.
Oh yeah. I guess he's there.
And regular the Superman Batman. Who's just fine.
Yeah.
Doing okay. I agree with you on that. I think Joshua Williamson is doing a great job with the story. This is a good, fun superhero epic. The thing that happens at the end of this issue, the new reveal of the new Jokerized hero is fun. The design is fun. There's definitely big, enjoyable superhero throughout. But yes, I think once this will be done, it'll be great to see Josh work on some other things with these heroes.
Yeah.
Because he does a great job of capturing their voices.
So good,
it's
fun.
The action is good. Excited to see what's coming next as well. Moving on to a Valiant comic book, Dr. Mirage number 3. Man, this book is a trip.
Yes. And the art, what I love about the artist here is the art is so grounded and expressive and specific in a way that I think allows the book to be as crazy as it is.
Yeah, I really like this issue. It's a very quick read, but mostly because the art is taking over the book. And I think there's a bit of a step back to allow for that. But it's mixing Egyptian mythology and Kirby-esque looks while having its own feel. It's great. We talked about this before on the show, and we had Max Visaggio on the show a couple of weeks ago, I guess, where she talked about it. This is definitely like I'm not a huge fan of the magical books usually.
You hate magic.
I don't like magic. I like real.
Yeah, no.
Keep it real.
I tried to do a card trick on you, and you
really
hated it.
The other day, you tried to hand me a cheese sandwich with mustard, and I was like, nope, no mustard.
Oh, boy. It was going to be...
Keep it plain.
The prank was going to be crazy on that.
Yeah, I'm too spicy for my face, you know?
Yeah.
This book is great. Definitely pick this up. Next one up, also from Marvel Comics, The Amazing Mary Jane number 1. This is the first ever solo title for Spider-Man's girlfriend, Mary Jane. She is in California filming a movie with a guy who we know, but she doesn't know until midway through the book, is actually Mysterio. We find out a little bit more about how Hollywood works.
Yes.
And we get a cameo from, and this blew my mind, Spider-Man.
Yeah, who would have seen this guy coming?
Yes.
And they did it through the phone.
Yes.
So, because he's not there.
No, he's not. What did you think about this book?
I like it. It's... I've always loved Mary Jane as a standalone character, as well as the girlfriend slash wife slash not wife of one Peter Parker. So it is interesting to see her out in L.A. I think that's a natural fit. I will say I'm surprised she signed on to do this movie with villains.
Yeah.
It felt a little like odd. But the fact that she's like, it's really good for my career. I'd like to see more of her internal thinking as we move forward. So it doesn't sound so just like, I'm just doing this.
It's a little bit of a weird thing because I'm totally blanking on the name of the villain over in Amazing Spider-Man. Retribution, Revenge, Vendetta, whatever his name is. The dude with the earthworms.
Yeah. The centipedes.
Yeah, so the big old centipedes coming out of his back or whatever's going on.
Yeah.
He, I believe, is the one who sent Mysterio to go do this to get Mary Jane out of the way. That detail makes this a little weird to me. If it wasn't for that detail, I would feel like, oh, the idea that Quentin Beck is trying to redeem himself on this movie set. Yeah. All these other villains are above the board. He's trying to redeem them as well. And worse villains are coming for them. That's fun. That's a fun setup, and it's fun to throw Mary Jade in the middle of that. That Centipede Dude gives me a little bit of hesitance because I enjoyed this book enough. I don't want it to tie into the other thing.
Oh, I mean, I think it must.
Right.
This feels also like an extension of the book, the Spider-Man book that Peter David did, that Mysterio was the villain of, was set back in like the mid-90s when he Spider-Man was dating Felicia Hardy.
Yeah.
And that dealt with Mysterio a lot. And this feels like an extension of him. In that book, he was trying to be a better person, and now here he is trying to do the same thing here. So I like that it connects to these sort of recent stories, but I am curious how it will continue to stand alone and what's going to happen to Mary Jane.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to Mary Jane?
Great question. One thing that I will call out particularly that I thought was super cute was they have a, over the phone, they have a 20-second dance party.
Yeah.
Super adorable.
Yeah, we do that.
Yeah. I call you up every day and we have a 20-second dance party.
My coworkers do not like it.
Another advanced one from Image out November 13th, Family Tree. Family Tree from Image Comic Books. Without getting too much into spoilers, what'd you think about this one?
I like this. This is Jeff Lemire and Phil Hester, I think,
doing
it. I love Phil Hester's art, and this is it's well done here, well executed for what this story is. Super tense stuff.
Yes,
dreadful things coming the way down the pipeline, and good. I don't want to say too much more because of...
Yeah, I think if you are a fan of Jeff Lemire, you're going to want to check this out because he always delivers a reliable story, and he does here as well. Again, this is very vague, but as you said, some messed up stuff happens.
So stay messed up out there and stay on this book.
Let's talk about another messed up book, also from Image, coming out November 27th, just in time for Thanksgiving. Killadelphia!
Yes.
Which is different than Flipadelphia from It's Always Sunny, which is like a cup flipping.
Yes.
Competition.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I love the art on this as well. Like watercolors.
So good.
Very cool. It was a little confusing at points, exactly what was happening.
Yeah.
But I like where it ends up in a nice way.
I agree. This is another one that's hard to spoil. It's a guy kind of investigating a case, sort of looking into his family and what's going on.
His father dies right at the beginning of the issue. And then it's him following the path. And his father was an investigator as well. And a lot of twists and turns about what his father was working on and what is happening in Killadelphia, which is actually Philadelphia.
Right. Yeah. It's different than Kiltsburg.
Yes. Right. Which is in Scotland, obviously, and a great place to not wear underwear.
Yes. This book is very good as well, particularly for the art. And I was very into it in the last couple of pages when there's a couple of big, rather horrifying reveals as you go on. I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say that a book called Killadelphia has horrifying things in it.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Though I was up in the Catskills recently, and there's very little killing up there these days.
Huh. Next one to talk about, another Spider-Man book, Amazing Spider-Man Full Circle number one. This book is wild.
It is wild.
Yes.
But it was written and drawn in an interesting way. A ton of Marvel creators got together and they told the story in a bunch of different parts. So a different writing and artist team would take over and carry the book forward, sort of Exquisite Corpse style, if you know what we're talking about.
Do you want to explain that?
That's where, it's basically what I just said, where a different person takes over to the writing of a project.
I'm still not getting it.
Okay. it's like how when a body is found, it takes a different team of writers to make the corpse beautiful.
Oh, okay. All right. Now I know what you're talking about.
It's an old funeral director term.
Yes.
Like, we as a group have to make this corpse exquisite.
You take the leg, I'll take the arm.
And let's hope we all choose clown as our theme.
this is a woolly story. That's sort of what I was thinking the entire time, where it's just like meandering all over the place and repeating things. I liked this, but it felt a little bit like reading somebody's dream written down.
Yeah, but I think they lean into that, and I sort of liked that of it. Especially Spider-Man's such a good character to use for something like this, because all his like regular issues feel sort of crazy, where he keeps getting thrown into different things. He's sometimes unaware of what's happening until like right at the very end, which is what happens here. I would like to see. I love the riffs they take, and some of them are funny, some of them are less, more serious, more dramatic. And I would like to see this done on a regular basis.
I would love to see them go for it, but shorter, frankly.
Right.
Like, this was about 90 pages long, I want to say. So yes. It's almost several full issues.
Right.
I was expecting going into it that it would be one issue and they'd almost do like page. Mm. Sort of what I thought they were going for with Marvel Comics 1000, but they also were not going for that there.
Right.
That to me would be the way to do this sort of thing. So it's like you flip every page, all you get is, say, the last panel from the previous page.
Right.
And you have to work off of this. The way you read this, there was clearly a bunch of massaging and tweaking that was done after the scripts came in, because there's things that if you're really doing it Exquisite Corpse style, they never would have recurred in every segment like that.
I think it was sort of, it helps the story to make it sort of make sense.
But I do think it defeats a little bit of the fun of it, where it is this crazy riffy style where things are improv style, where it's like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
That doesn't connect.
Well, but the beauty of improv is that you often try to make those connections, and those connections happen naturally.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. Everything I do is scripted.
I know. It's disgusting.
Last one to talk about from DC Comics, Wonder Woman number 81. This is G. Willow Wilson's last issue on the title. It is a tie-in to the overall Legion of Doom thing that's going on as Cheetah fights against Wonder Woman and some other stuff happens. How'd you feel about this run? How'd you feel about this book?
Cheetah, to me, I don't know why Cheetah is the one. Maybe we've talked about this before. Why Cheetah is Wonder Woman's arch nemesis. They feel like they're characters from
the opposite of a lady is a cat lady.
Yeah, I guess that's the lady or the tiger. Mm-hmm. I guess that's definitely true. We've all agreed with that about that in society. But they just seem like they have a history together, but otherwise it seems like a mismatch.
Yeah. I like Cheetah. I think you could do a good Cheetah story. I'm trying to remember who did a very good Cheetah story back in the day. I'm blanking on it, but this Wonder Woman was fine. It was good. It was solid. I think G. Willow Wilson did a good job. The art was very good and clean. Clearly, they were going for a very George Perez vibe on the title, and I think they nailed that. But I don't know. Either people take way too bold swings with Wonder Woman, or they play it too safe with Wonder Woman, and I don't know where that middle ground is. You know, that story that is going to break through for her, that is going to be big in the way that the George Perez story was, or Greg Rucka's run was, or Gail Simone's run was. These were all really good, really interesting things, solid runs that added more to the mythology. And here, I feel like we're running on the same treadmill over and over again.
Yeah, it feels like with Wonder Woman in the past few years, the stories keep making tiny loops where it's like her life changes a little bit and then it sort of comes back to normal and then changes and comes back to normal. So everything feels like, I feel like I've read this before a little bit. And like, especially Steve Trevor, it always feels like they're like, oh, I love you, but I have to go do this other thing.
Right.
And it's like, let them be together or get them out of there for a while.
Yeah. I'd love to see, even though I wasn't enamored of it the entire time, Brian Azzarello and Cliff Chiang's run took such a big, crazy swing with Wonder Woman. It was still fascinating to read the entire time.
That was when she was the God of War and all of that?
That was all of the gods had been exiled and she was slowly going around and reactivating them,
I
believe.
Yeah, I love that. That felt like Peter David's Incredible Hulk in the 90s, where it was a very specific sort of map of story that they were dealing with, and you got to just see her sort of move through each arc. And Cliff Chiang's art also helped a lot because it was amazing.
Yeah. But this was good. If you're looking for a good, solid Wonder Woman story, I think this is the way to go. Steve Orlando is coming on the book, and he did a great job with a couple of fill-in issues here and there on Wonder Woman. So I'm excited to see what he does and if he takes any big swings. Overall, again, good run, solid Wonder Woman story. Not necessarily anything hugely new, but if you're a fan of the character, worth picking up.
My favorite Wonder Woman happening right now is over in Justice League Dark.
Yes.
Which I think is cool because it's a little bit out of her element because it is with this dark magic stuff, but she feels like a Wonder Woman who is standing alone in her own character in that book.
Yeah, Totally agree. All right. If you like our show and would like to support it, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on by and we will chat with you about comic books. Also, what do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you can find out more information about us. And follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. You can subscribe on iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. And real quick note, but I actually died 9 minutes ago.
Yes.
This is just one long passing gas.
Very quietly killed him over the course of talking.
Well, it's been nice knowing all of you.
Uninterrupted podcast murder.